Welcome, my friends, to The Marvel of Horror, where we discuss all things past, present, and future as they pertain to the horror genre. I'm your host, your friend, fellow horror enthusiast Bruce Marvel, and today our guest, he's been in numerous musical projects over the years, Wasted Theory, a little group I know something about, Black Hand, and he has a potential music project coming up.
New Dawn Fades.
We'll get into that. This is a really cool episode because he's been my best friend and generally one of my favorite people for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
He is Corey Primetime Pettingill. Corey, welcome, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, man. Pleasure to have you. Yeah. I was going to come with, he's Corey. Welcome to Primetime Bitch Pettingill.
Well,
you know, in honor of us talking about Hellraiser 3.
Yes. Hellraiser 3.
Psych. We're obviously talking about Friday the 13th. So, you're... I probably have heard the story many a times, but what is, like, your first experience with the horror genre? Was it a movie? Was it something you read? Was it something that happened when you were a kid?
So, yeah, probably... So, it was the video rental section of Acme. Back in the day, Acme would rent... You know, had a small video rental section.
Yeah.
And they had like a decent horror selection. So when my mom was like grocery shopping, my brother and I, we would just look at the movies. So, you know, seeing, you know, Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
Creepshow, the, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street movies, just seeing all the VHS boxes. That was like my first experience with horror. So
for us, it was Pathmark. I don't know if you remember Pathmark.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, like, so that was, but yeah, back in the day, like, where you only really had like, the cover art to really sell you on the movie, which was like something that I think is kind of like a lost art form today.
Yeah, it's similar to like, you know, albums.
Yeah.
Know, unless you go to a record store, but, you know, how many people really do that anymore?
I don't know. I think, I don't really even know. I think the only real record store I know, being Delaware native, Delaware, first in the Union, best in the East. Rainbow Records, it's still over on Main Street, or off kind of like Main Street.
Yeah, yeah, Rainbow, they got some good stuff.
They got some good stuff. But yeah, nobody, I feel like nobody really puts like a lot of effort into like their album art. Maybe some of the big time guys do, but.
Yeah, I mean, when it's just like a little thumbnail on Spotify, I feel like people just kind of overlook it, you know what I mean? So it kind of sucks, but.
You could always be like Danzig. draw your own. Your new project coming up, is there anything you can tell us about it as far as, like, I know you guys, we talked earlier, you guys are working on some, like new music for it.
Yeah, yeah, so New Dawn Fades, it's still a relatively new thing, but we'll be recording some songs in September. If you're a fan of Danzig and the occult, you know, Sabbath, Soundgarden, you'll love it, so.
Love it already? It's like, yeah. Danzig and Sound. You had me at Danzig and then like Soundgarden. Yeah, obviously. That's fucking super cool, man. Yeah. And it's really, so you're playing guitar.
I'm playing guitar.
How you are to music is like how I see myself, like the horror. Like I'm so into horror movies and I'm always like trying to find new like horror movies to watch and stuff like that. You're always like that with music. You're always turning like your Instagram and everything. You're always trying to find new music and it's always like really good music. And I have experience with this, like, your riffs are always, like, the fucking...
Thanks, man.
The rocking, you know what I mean? Like, you
appreciate
are the fucking...
That.
Well, call a spade, you know what I mean? Like, the riffs... Like, when we were in Black Hand, you always came up with, like, fucking awesome riffs. I mean, they were fucking some of the coolest, like, yeah, Sabbath and heavy, like, that real Sabbath, like, Alice in Chains fucking styles, always super cool. It's always fun, like, trying to... When I wasn't getting inside my own head with lyrics, it was always cool to like put in lyrics to these riffs because they're so fucking rocking.
It was always a lot of fun. I mean, I just try to write stuff that I would want to listen to. You know what I mean? I kind of feel like that's, you know, the motivation for any type of musical endeavor is because if you wouldn't listen to your own stuff, then why make it? You know what I mean? Like,
oh, absolutely. Yeah, so. Absolutely.
That's just my personal thing on it, but yeah.
Just to add to that, it goes to show, because like I said, the music was always, like, you have a, I'm biased, but you always you have a fucking awesome taste in music, especially metal music. So,
thanks,
like, you're,
man.
You know what I mean? So, like, hearing those riffs and really knowing, like, where it's coming from, like, hearing the inspirations, but it's still being fresh and new. So I'm really I can't wait for that project. Like you were talking about, I definitely want to like get that album when it comes out and go see, like support you guys, you know, support fucking being in Delaware. At least in my experience, there's not a lot of like places to play metal. So
yeah,
you know what I mean? Support you guys, support. If you could catch a metal band somewhere and they're fucking awesome, man.
Even just an original band. I mean, I feel like, yeah, not to not cover bands or anything, because, you know, it's part of it. But, you know, if there's no place for original music to be supported and kind of, you know, given a venue, it's going to die out. You're just going to have a bunch of people covering Mustang Sally.
It'd be a total hellscape. Shit, you got slowed. Oh, man, no. Did we ever, like, before we delve into what we're going to discuss, did you ever figure out who requested that at your wedding?
I did not.
You did not? Yeah, that's okay. So, we, like, no offense to anyone who likes that song. We hate that song. Yeah, when you got married, we were there, and you just heard it. And, like, it was like me, you, and G just started looking at each other. You, like, we looked, I think me and G looked at each other first. G, miss you, buddy. We looked at each other first, and everyone's like, uh-oh. And then we looked at you. You just had this look on your face, like,
yeah, because that was specifically on the do not playlist.
I have a feeling I know who it was, but we won't speak the name of that guy.
Oh yeah,
fuck him.
Dipshit.
Anyway. So, me and you share a very love for the Nightmare on Elm Street series, and we could obviously do hours talking about the series, but we kind of singled it out to Nightmare on Elm Street 3. That's one that's... Nightmare on Elm Street 3 is like a movie I watch like once a year, almost.
Yeah, I think it's probably the best one. You know, there's always the argument for the first one, which is still a really good movie, but I think the third one... all, you know, is probably the better of the two, in my opinion.
Like you said, the first one, obviously, because it's the original and all that stuff. But I think the third one, I think holds up better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So a little bit about the third one. The third one, which is came out on February 27th, 1987. Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors is about a... I guess the last of the Elm Street children, you know, the people, the parents of the ones who killed Freddy, he's stalking their kids one by one. The parents don't want to believe it, so they're in this mental institution very conveniently together. They bring back some old faces of Heather Langenkamp. They replay the role of Nancy, her father, John Saxon. They come back kind of reprising their roles. This movie, so doing a little bit of research about the behind-the-scenes stuff like that. Like I said, I know the movie because I watch it so often. It never gets old to me. A lot of quotable.
It's the most quotable, probably horror movie I can think of.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of iconic stuff in this movie. They really... So this is the movie that really gets Freddy his comedic... ball rolling, I think.
Yeah.
You start seeing like the one-liners, you know, obviously we know the welcome to prime time,
my TV.
my favorite kill in the whole franchise, the fucking TV.
Yeah, I mean, iconic.
I mean, come on, let's get high.
That's another good one. Yeah. Well, I mean, even killing the fucking wizard kid.
Yeah. Yeah, killing the Harry Potter before there was Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. That... Sorry, kid. I don't believe in fairy tales.
I
can just see, like, because, like, I feel like now, like, kind of like comic books, too. Like, in the 80s, like, you weren't cool if you read comics. Well, that's what a lot of people don't know. Back in 1987, you weren't cool if you, like, read comic books. You were like, oh, you're like kind of like a nerd, at least in my experience.
Yeah, no, in my experience. Yeah, too,
and you weren't
X-Men.
Cool.
Yeah. Fucking dork.
Yeah, and you weren't cool if you played Dungeons and Dragons or Magic or any of that stuff. I feel like that's kind of changed. I feel like
Stranger Things really kind of.
There you go. Stranger Things, which I Stranger Things really, especially this past season, really borrows a lot from this film.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I feel like I can just see jocks. I can see jocks in a theater like 1987 just laughing when the Wizard Kid gets it. It's really kill that Dungeons and Dragons dork.
Can't believe he's not dreaming about calculators.
Look at that nerd. You know,
fucking so dork.
Wish he would have went first. So, like, this, yeah, this was movie.
That, so, real quick, I feel like this movie had a number of disabled kids getting killed in it. Like, an abnormally high amount of disabled kids getting killed in it. Like,
I think it did.
The deaf kid, or was he deaf or he couldn't talk?
He was deaf and he couldn't talk. And he bites it in four, but he gets. He has a hell of a time in this movie, and we know about that. We know about that scene, like the.
That's a great scene.
That's a great scene.
Yeah. Come and get him, bitch.
Come and get him, bitch. It's like, I like you, Joey. The fucking sexy nerd. So, personal story with that. I think we were talking about this earlier, and I bring this up on a different episode. My parents were so weird about what we were allowed to watch and what we weren't allowed to watch. Nightmare on Elm Street 3. 1987, was on the do not watch list, and obviously we didn't follow that rule. So I'll never forget the first time I had seen this movie. I didn't get to watch it all the way through because me and my older brothers, we got busted by my dad, and it was right at the sexy naked nurse scene. That's I think Sally Piper, I think her name is, or something. Yeah, Sally Piper, yeah. Sexy nurse in the infamous scene with Joey getting tongue-tied to the bed.
Yeah.
So yeah, we got caught during that scene, and we were too busy getting beat with a belt to really finish see the climactic ending to that film with the poor man's Harryhausen Freddy skeleton.
Fucking deadite skeleton.
Deadite skeleton. Which, I mean, like I said, that's to me watch the movie, that's one of the only really effects that still
looks
that don't hold up. Yeah,
yeah, it doesn't hold up.
Yeah, you know, like the 1981 Clash of the Titans skeleton beating up my man Craig Watson. You know who I'm talking about. He looks like Bill Maher.
Yeah. Poor man's Bill Maher.
Poor man's Bill Maher just like trying to get beat up by the skeleton. Yeah. It's not there. It's the only real scene that doesn't hold up. But like, what was your first time seeing this film?
I don't really remember, but I know, like, I had seen scenes from other movies before. So, like, I remember seeing the bus scene from Freddy 2.
Yeah.
You know, so, and even kind of going back, you'd hear your friends talking about Freddy Krueger, especially if they had an older brother. Like, oh, I saw the movie, you know, if Freddy Krueger kills you. So I was already, like, scared of Freddy before I ever saw any of the fucking movies.
Yeah.
But I think, like, PHL 17 would play just, like, random horror movies on, like, Saturday and Sundays. So I think I was watching Fright Night, and then Nightmare on Elm Street 3 came on after that.
Oh, Fright Night's so good. Yes. Like, real quick, getting off the topic of this movie, is Fright Night, like, your all-time favorite horror movie, you think?
That's tough to say. I mean, I love that movie, but I think there's ones I like more, like First Hellraiser.
Yeah, First Hellraiser's really good movie. Even I like the sequel too. The sequel,
yeah,
like, it's really
yeah.
fucking weird.
Yeah, I saw that. It was playing at a like my aunt took us to a like a Field of Screams type thing in Maryland. I mean, this is probably like 1991 or something, and it was playing while we were waiting.
Nice.
And, yeah, and like so, I was probably like in fourth or fifth grade, and it's like, you know, I think there was some boobs in that one.
I think so.
Yeah. So,
it was
it was a good movie.
It was a
talk
long...
about scenes that kind of don't hold up though, like the whole labyrinth.
Yeah,
looks weird. It looks like something from Tron, maybe.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. That had to be. I don't know. That's the thing with like horror movies. Like, if you're gonna pull off something like Hellraiser 2, especially that, like, kind of need a budget.
Yeah,
kind of feel like they kind of skimped on the budget. Something, you know, talking about this movie, so This one actually acts more like the sequel to the first one than the second one does. The second one's kind of like, you could kind of take it out.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't miss a beat between these two movies. Right. But the second one did so well, even though...
It was so awful.
It was so awful, but it did really well in Europe. Like, it did good here, but it did, like, really well in Europe. Like, even though it did really well in the States, the people who made it, like, New Line Cinema was like, it ain't the numbers we wanted, but it's enough to put, like, to throw, like, a super huge budget at this movie. So they threw, like, a really big budget at this movie, and it all went to, like, special effects.
Yeah, I mean, like, his makeup looked good in this one. Like... It looked good in the first one. Like, it was really scary in the first one.
Yeah.
Like that weird wet look. And
yeah. And they were really careful. Like, you don't really get to see... Like, in the first one, like, every time they kind of show them, it's, like, really dark, I feel like.
Yeah.
So which yeah, hides any kind of, like, imperfections, like, really well. This one, it's, like, full-on lighting. But, yeah, that makeup looks, like, really good. It's not, like... By the time we get to like Freddy 6, the makeup's like real bad.
Oh, dude, it's so bad. It looks like silly putty and
It's better than Spirit of Halloween, but not by much.
Better than Spirit of Halloween, but not better than Halloween Adventure.
Yeah, it's true, and I'm pretty sure I'm pretty sure like in 6 they don't even. So this is the first time we see like the whole body torso and like all the faces of like because they really build on his like. Mythology in this movie about like taking souls and stuff.
Yeah, well, that's cool. Probably one of my favorite parts about the movie is they added like they gave him a backstory.
Yeah, and it was actually like a really good one. Like it didn't.
Amanda Krueger, his mom, the creepy nun.
Yeah,
you know, that was definitely a good part of the movie that I thought was really added to it. She was terrifying looking.
Yeah, she was. That's like you're like. Nuns have always been scary for different reasons. You know, me growing up with a Catholic background, you always heard your parents and your grandparents talk about, like, nuns beating you with rulers and shit like that. Didn't have a ruler in her hand, but, like, yeah, it was very scary. Like, the kind of, like going back and watching, it's like, man, you can't tell this woman's, like, dead and the ghost, man. She's creepy looking, dude.
Yeah, Bill Maher, like, I don't know what the fuck he was thinking.
Yeah, what are you doing, man? He's probably one of the only... I don't know, horror, like, franchise icons where I think they actually did a good job giving him a really cool origin story without making it, like, a joke. I mean, if you watch, they tried it with Michael Myers years later, and, like, they kind of messed up, in my opinion, they kind of messed up, like, the Freddy, or not Freddy, the Jason origin stuff. Like, a lot of people, okay, well, his origin story, he was a kid. How's he like a grown Frankenstein man at this point? You know, that they did a really good job of actually like thinking it through and writing like a really good story for him.
Yeah.
When they were going to do this movie and they were like kind of really unhappy with part two, they went to Wes Craven and they were like, hey, so, we want to give you the option to do on the third one. Would you be interested? And he wasn't happy with the second one. So him and this guy... I think his name is, I have it written down in my mind, Bruce Wagner. If I get your name wrong, sir, sorry. So they wrote like a script. I didn't realize till like just recently that Chuck Russell and Frank Darabont, who did The Mist, did Shawshank Redemption, did a lot of stuff, they actually penned the script for this movie. Jack Russell went to actually direct it, or Chuck Russell, I'm sorry. Chuck Russell actually went to direct it, but him and Frank Darabont like wrote the script that became this movie. So I guess we got to thank them for like this kind of hit them and Wes Craven for like this cool origin story. But yeah, Chuck Russell, you may know, directed such films as Eraser and The Mask. Oh. Smoking. I was waiting. When I saw that, I was like, oh, man, I can't wait to tell Corey that the guy who did this movie fucking directed The Mask with Jim Carrey. Your face says it all, man.
Oh, shit. Even Eraser, man, that was actually a really good movie.
Eraser was a great movie.
For your mid-90s Arnold
movies. Yeah. Eraser's, I think...
Coming off of True Lies and Terminator 2, and I think there was maybe two or three in between that.
Yeah, he did some of those comedies, you know? Yeah. Like, I think...
Was Kindergarten Cop after Terminator 2, or...?
I'm pretty sure he did Kindergarten Cop, like, after Twins. I think when he did Twins with Ivan Reitman, it was like he went right on to, like, Kindergarten Cop, because it's the same, you know, same director and stuff. But I'm trying to think if he did... What was Terminator? 91, maybe?
Yeah, 91.
91, so I'm trying to think. It might have came... They might have came after or right around the same time, because it just seemed like in the 90s, I mean, he was just putting movies out.
Yeah. Yeah, I just remember when he kills the alligator, it gives your luggage. That was kind of lazy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Kind of lazy.
Well, I mean, leading up to that scene where it was like she's caught in the aquarium or wherever, like the alligator exhibit. And it's like, you're late, traffic. But whatever. Arnold can get away with it because he's Arnold. Yeah. And we love Arnold here at the Marvel of Horror. And he was in a great horror movie called End of Days. Nothing to do with this movie.
Yeah, he fights the devil. I think at one point he uses a fucking rocket launcher.
I think you're correct.
Thomas Aquinas, Marge, he didn't have a fucking tongue.
The man has no tongue.
That is a good movie.
Oh, great movie. Watch it.
It's so fucking ridiculous.
I know. Well, next time you're on, we'll do that movie. We'll do the comparison of End of Days and Stigmata. Yeah.
The Gabriel Byrne two shot,
which has Patricia Arquette, which is she was this was her first movie. You know, it was her first movie, and I think it was Lawrence Fishburne's, like, fourth movie, who went as Larry Fishburne.
Yeah, you know, he was credited with an actual name, I think, in this one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a doctor. Or,
yeah.
Like, the orderly.
Yeah, he wasn't, like, thug number two. Yeah. Thug number two, like some Streets of Rage bad guy.
Man, yeah. Was it Death Wish 2 or 3? Whatever. I think it was 3, where they're in the subway, and he's got, like, I mean, the most... 1980s sunglasses I ever seen in my life. They might have been like the Venetian blind sunglasses,
probably,
but they were like the stretched out ones. Like, it's so ridiculous. Like,
probably, like, I want to say it was either 2 or 3. There was a lot of, I think even Jeff Goldblum was like a thug in like one of the Death Wish movies. You got it like real some, you know, real bad way by Charles Bronson.
He was not playing around.
He was not playing around, sir.
No.
Charlie fucking Bronson.
Yeah.
But, like, Patricia Arquette, so this was, like, her first movie, and, like, watching some of the extras, and we talked off camera about the Never Sleep Again, which is an awesome Nightmare on Elm Street documentary if you ever get a chance to watch it. So this was Patricia Arquette's, like, first movie, and Chuck Russell... who came in was getting like a really hard time from like the studio. Like, you know, they were introducing like all these new ideas as far as like his origin and stuff like that, his backstory. And they were real, by this time, they were already very careful with this character. You know, Freddy had Nightmare on Elm Street 1 and 2 had like basically started New Line Cinema.
Yeah.
Like, what you wouldn't, if not this for the success of like Nightmare on Elm Street 1, which was kind of considered like an indie film at the time, you wouldn't even have had New Line Cinema. Like, they kind of banked everything on it. So they were like real particular with this character. They were giving him like a really hard time. So there was the tension on set was like really high. I think he really didn't really get along with like the cast a lot. They had a lot of problems with him. And Patricia Arquette, yeah, like her.
Yeah, because she didn't reprise her role in the fourth one.
She didn't reprise her role in the fourth one, and I think she's pretty hard up to, like, really talk about this movie. Like, I don't think she'll do a lot of interviews. I don't think she'll do a lot of, you know, conventions and stuff like that. And like I said, I've never heard her speak publicly about this movie. I think she had a really horrible time doing it and, like, doesn't want to remember it. But, I mean, she was great in the movie. Like I said, it's definitely my favorite out of the whole series. Definitely a memorable role.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's, like, yeah, I mean, there's just so many great scenes in this movie. You know, the Freddy snake
There were so many, like this movie, I think, out of, like, any horror movie I've ever seen, has got, like, the most effects. And they were all great, like, effects.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, you figure the mirrors. I mean, except, you know, the deadite skeleton at the end.
Yeah, like I said, that's the only one that, like, doesn't really, like, hold up. Like, even the scene where they find Joey, and it looks like it's the boiler room, but it's, like, the boiler room, like, in hell, basically.
Yeah,
like, that
yeah.
whole, like, I mean, that's a huge set they built. Like, when you go back and look at, like, the detail of that set, it's like, wow, man, and they made all that. Like, that's one thing about, like, horror movies now that I kind of go on about. It's like, if you watch, like, I love the Insidious movies, and I love the Conjuring movies. You can see it's, Hammer films were great for doing that. They're taking the same exact set and just yeah. dressing it up, but you can see it. And it starts to just kind of be like, oh, it's like the same movie.
Yeah, like the Conjuring house is the same as the house from Insidious.
Yeah, yeah. Well, even like, yeah, like the Curse of La Llorona or something. It's like all those movies that fall in that universe, is that you can tell it's like the same house they're messing with. Like that set has probably made so much money for them. Over the years, because they use it. And then, I get it. It's a good, like, keeping the cost of the movie down. But Nightmare on Elm Street 3, man, that budget just to the set design and the makeup and all that stuff. I mean, that's another reason why I think that movie, why the other ones aren't as successful. Because they start getting kind of, like, cheap with the sets.
Yeah, and I mean, makeup. I think by the fourth one, they're, like, running out of ideas and, like, you know.
I think by the time four rolls around, it's like he's like full blown like comedy. Like
yeah.
Three, it's like, okay, man, these one liners are cool, but he's still like really scary and dark. I mean, with four is the fucking the karate scene in four.
Yeah, and the shark, the Freddy shark. Yeah.
Yeah, the glasses. Yeah.
When you get to six, he's like playing video games and
oh yeah, yeah. Power oh god fucking power glove, man, I lost it with the power glove.
Yeah,
terrible.
But yeah, getting back to three, I mean, you know, it's got, like, you go back to like the one liners man, like there's just, well, even before that, like you have like we're talking about the set design, so they had the model house she's building, it's all creepy, it's, you know, the house from the first one.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know what, that's another really, it's like the things they add in this movie as far as like building on the old mythology and bringing like some of the old characters back and like basically, like I said, making it a direct sequel to the first one. It's all really well planned and thought out, and I love how they like the bike rolling with the blood and it starts like to melt. That's a yeah. really cool like effect they did, and like some of the stuff I was watching on like that documentary, like a lot of the stuff they built was like crazy. Like they literally to the Welcome to Primetime bitch kill scene, they like built that TV and they built like those arms. So they filmed it like when the arms came out, like it's that's like one big like animatronic they built to come around, and then they like kind of filmed it like grabbing her and moving, and they kind of like they had like a prop of like a head mask thing they built to come up and then shot it with his face, like, so they did that scene, like, so there was so much that went into just doing that scene.
Yeah.
So much shit they built. The pig scene with the pig on the table. Like, there was, like, so much money to get, like, an animatronic pig that would, like, come alive. So they just, like, fried up a real pig. And they had a guy, like, underneath doing, like, a puppet. They said, like, it stunk, like, so bad. But it was a real pig that they fucking used. There was a guy under that fucking table, like, doing that shit. That wheelchair they fucking built. You know what I mean? The fucking... You look tired. Have a seat.
By the King Lorath. Prince of Elves. Demon be gone.
They interview that guy. Like they interview that guy. And he tells the story. He's like, yeah, man. So like... They had to do like a scene where like Robert Englund like stabs him. You know, they put like a fucking 2x4 like underneath his costume, and he's like sitting there thinking like, "Yeah, I hope he don't fucking miss," because that's what he's like fucking stabbing. He's got like a block of what the dude's going to Man, he could have. Yeah, he could have been like fucking. Could have been Brandon Lee on set.
Yeah, really. That would have been the end of the
with Freddy's finger knives. This movie also put Dokken on the map, man.
It did, man. You know, got a pretty killer video and song out of that. You know, I think you can't talk about the movie without talking about the video.
Nope, absolutely. So the video was actually to the video. A little bit of trivia: the music video, Dream Warriors, Dokken. Rocking with Dokken. Still like Dokken.
George Lynch, man.
Damn right. First, was the first video to be featured on a VHS. Because that video was, like, so huge. That's, like, that, so that video, like, actually got me, like, as a kid. Because we used to watch MTV, and it was always, like, for, I feel like for the longest time, it was, like, number one on, like, the top 20 countdown.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean...
So, like, I would, yeah, I saw the video, like, numerous times before I ever got a chance to, like, finally sit down and watch the movie the whole way through. But, yeah, it was cool. They actually got, like, I think that was the first, like, real video where they actually got, like, the actors from the movie. Because Patricia Arquette's in it. I think even the guy who directed the movie directed it. Chuck Russell.
Probably, because it looked like they used some of the same set and
everything. Yeah. So, like, yeah, that dude, that and, like, Robert Englund, obviously. So, like, yeah, the video was, like, super cool. And, the, like, that was the, I think that was the first real, like, okay, we're gonna film this with the movie. And it's just going to act like this, work better than a fucking trailer, really.
Yeah, when you think about it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was a cool song for its time.
Yeah, it's still a decent song.
It's not bad. It's not bad. It's
a little cheesy, but you know.
Yeah, it's one of those songs. It's one of those songs where it's like, man, if I'm by myself driving, I'll have it on. People get in the car. We listen to DreamWorks now.
Nah, man, just listen to Hatebreed.
Yeah, listen to Slayer, man. Dream Warriors. I haven't liked that song in 30 years. I don't know how much we can say. I don't want to get us in trouble or get us indicted. But there's been a lot of times. We've stayed up late watching this movie under some influence.
Leave it at that.
Yeah. Okay. Cut. Even though it's not the sequel, technically, I definitely think it's the best horror sequel to, you know what I mean? It's one of the few movies where I think you can make the case that it's actually better than the original. I don't think a lot of other movies can make that statement.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Like, it definitely built on the first one without, you know, totally shitting all over it like the second one did. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like I said, the second one you could totally just not even include, and it doesn't, you know what I mean? It's just like you can kind of put it in, and I think that's one thing like Wes Craven talks about, or, you know, when he was alive. Rest in power, Wes Craven. He like hated that movie. He like watched it and he's like, yeah, it's not cohesive. Like, the story's not cohesive. It doesn't, like, it's just like, he described it as like, it's just like scenes. You're just putting scenes together. Nothing really like flows and stays. And when you go back and watch it, that's, despite everything, that's kind of like my gripe with that movie. He's kind of right. Like, there's some cool imagery and there's some cool stuff that happens in two, but nothing really like flows together. Like, yeah, it's like a guy put a bunch of scenes together.
Yeah.
And it kind of plays out that way. And we know it's like a, you know, we know it's a super gay movie. Yeah. I mean, it's true.
Yeah, the guy who...
It's not like, not judging the movie. It's, you know.
Yeah, it was like a, the dude was using it as like a metaphor for being gay. Like, you know, because how Freddie was like, coming out of him or something. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah.
Well, you know, that's like going back to that documentary, they say like that's why the movie actually did so well in Europe versus like the States, because like Europe was already like way ahead of us as far as like picking up on that kind of stuff. Like, I think back in the 80s, America still wasn't ready to like accept that aspect of like people's lives and stuff like that. But like Europe, they're already kind of like, okay, yeah, we know this is a thing. And they caught up on like the, that eroticism, like just like that. Meanwhile, you know, we're just like, this movie seems kind of gay. I don't know if I should bring that up or not, but
yeah.
Like I said, it's still, you know,
there's some great lines Freddy has in that movie though. You're all my children now.
Yeah. Well, they're still like,
hey man, we're just here to help you. Hope you're so.
There's some really good stuff in that movie, and like that's another movie where like the makeup is really cool. Like he does the whole like when he's like, you got the body, I've got the mind. He does that whole, I'm like, yeah, that's fucking cool. They kind of play up like the house still in that movie, so it has a little bit of like tie in because they move into Nancy's house, which becomes like the crook, you know, the a big time like iconic symbol in this franchise. There was one thing I noticed too about the movies, like, you know, from the first one, like I noticed like you can actually kind of see it in these figures too. So this figure right here is just kind of more like from the first movie where it's like really baggy and stuff like that. But I think like by the time the third movie rolls around, he's like shopped and got a sweater that like contours his body better.
Yeah.
Modeled here.
Yeah, I think by like the fourth or fifth one, man, it like looks clean.
Oh yeah.
It's like bright red.
It's like bright, yeah. Like they, I'm telling you, they picked it up at fucking Halloween Adventure.
Yeah,
I think like in this movie, like the budget, like everything, I don't think the actors got paid like anything. And apparently the actors were like abused as far as like the effect, as far as like the stuff like I was watching. They prep like that, going back to like the big Freddy snake or whatever. I guess when they first did that scene, they wanted it to look more like a penis to be symbolic. But that thing was like all like the one scene it's mechanical, and then the one scene it like they do stuff to it to make it look more like animated in the way it moves. But that was like a big mechanical like prop they built, and they really had to like. They were showing how they did it, and I guess Patricia Arquette's like standing over the thing, and the thing had to like come up and catch her and move around with her, and it was like all mechanic, and like the cast was like, man, it was like really dangerous to watch.
Yeah. Who was the one dude's name?
Kincaid?
Kincaid, yeah. He had some great lines too.
Fuck you! You sit down!
Quit blowing smoke up our ass!
Oh, great. Now my dick's killing me. He had some really cool stuff.
Even in the fourth one, he had a great line, man. I'll see you in hell.
Tell him Freddy sent you. Man, I remember, like, so kind of talking about four, because four could be its own episode, but four, I remember seeing, my mom took me and my brother to see part four at the Tri-State Mall. Leave it at that. It was kind of hard to enjoy that movie. I think I was like, I forget how old I was, too. I think I was like 10.
Yeah, I figure that probably came out in what, 89?
I think like this movie was so huge, they like fast tracked it.
They had the TV show, too, that came out.
So this Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, 1987, was just like, I mean, it was a number one movie for weeks. I mean, it was like the Avengers Endgame of its time when it came out. It was so big. Like that was back in the day when like people loved going to the movies. Like there was certain cities and certain towns like had to have like cops there to like regulate, like because shit was getting like so out of control. And I remember like Siskel and Ebert like wanted this movie to have like an X rating because all the bad, like now you watch it, it's like, what? It's the worst thing in this movie is like, I mean, it's not even really like when you look by today's standards, it's not really
like
gory.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, it's not really gory.
It's not really gory. I think like the grossest thing in it's like the
let's get high.
The anti-drug message of the 80s of Freddy Krueger killing Taryn with the fucking like gross ass track marks coming alive.
Yeah.
It's like that's like the goriest thing in that movie. But yeah, back then it was like they wanted it X-rated and it was like causing all this kind of buzz, and it did huge numbers as far as like movies go. And yeah, and it like Freddy literally became like a household name. I remember the show came from it. Like I remember being a little kid and it's like a rated R movie, but there was Freddy Krueger toys at like Toys R Us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That was back like kids bought toys at Toys R Us. Not like when it was a lot like before Toys R Us had closed down, like grown ups were buying toys at Toys R Us.
Yes.
It's like when kids still bought toys. Parents still bought their kids toys. The Nintendo game.
Yeah. What was that song? He didn't do it, but like the Fat Boys, Nightmare on My Street.
Was it DJ? Was it Will Smith Fat Boys?
It was the Fat Boys.
Nightmare on My Street.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, Duncan. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, he was everywhere. I mean, the thing with the Fat Boys might have been later, but it was around that time, between 88 and 90, probably.
He became like a household name, and like I said, this is the one that really got the ball rolling on him being like dark comedy, and then like part four just became like a comedy.
Yeah. Yeah, because then it was just like one-liners for everything.
One-liner.
Let's suck face.
Oh man, yeah, that's actually really cool. That's actually like I wouldn't say it's my second favorite kill, but it's in my top five of Freddy kills. I like that one because I like it. It fits because she has the asthma.
Yeah,
it's like really cool.
Yeah, because like I'm trying to think like. Yeah, there's so many things like you kind of have to suspend some disbelief, but like, yeah, like how the fuck did that girl end up in the TV like that? Like they think that's just normal.
You
know what I mean? Like,
what? That's like a thing too. Like,
I mean, obviously it's just fucking movie or whatever, but
yeah
it's kind of hard to.
But like you said, yeah, like okay, even okay, if you're like the grown ups, and that's another thing, like. In some interviews I watched, and even like Wes Craven, like something they kept from like his original script for the movie was kind of like how the big thing in the 80s was like the establishment, like thinking they know what's best for you when they don't, you know what I mean? So that was like something they kind of played into. It's like, you got all these adults trying to, they got the right intentions, but they're trying to like know what's best for you while at the same time, they're not listening to like the problems you're actually trying to give them. And like thinking that, you can kind of, that really plays out now when I think about the movie. But like, yeah, there's all these kids. They just got this too much sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And it's like this TV is like 6 foot off the ground, and this woman weighs like 90 pounds. Like, how did she get this running jump start into this? And that was like a tube TV.
Yeah.
That could withstand they could withstand like you throwing like a bowling ball at it almost. Like you'd have to hurl like a bowling ball at it just to get like one of these things to crack, let alone like have someone's head go through it blown up. And they gotta and all kinds of stuff. Like another thing too, it's like there's all kinds of shit in that movie. Like the one kill, they allude to Freddy, like they allude to a death that happens that you don't see, like about the kid, like, oh, we don't know where he got the razors, but he cut his own eyelids off so he wouldn't sleep. And it's like, that's obviously like they're hitting like a Freddy Krueger kill you didn't see. He got to somebody already.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, shit like that. It's like, come on, man. Like any institution, after you lost the second kid, you would have been like shut down. This is like, okay, five people have died in like a week. We're not really Your methods are in question.
I think whatever state Springwood was in is really going to come under investigation in the next couple years about these crimes that... Yeah.
I don't think Springwood's going to get away with it like the Catholic Church did. Not for this long. Not when kids are reporting people sleepwalking with their veins like getting cut out of their body. That was a really cool kill on that movie.
Yeah, yeah. So you got the little Freddy puppet. But yeah,
like this one.
But, you know, seeing that, it reminds me of that Tool video.
Oh, yes. Sober?
Yeah.
Speaking of that, going back to Hellraiser, Frank reminds me of a Tool video.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, now that, yeah, you know what? He does remind me. I kind of wonder if that's where they got, like, their inspiration.
Because I know Adam Jones from Tool actually worked on a lot of Hollywood movies.
Yeah.
Doing props and stuff. I want to say he worked on Terminator 2.
No shit.
Yeah. I think maybe he did something with The Fly. So, I mean, that would kind of track. You know what I mean? But yeah, going back to that. So that guy, I guess when you're first getting introduced to all these troubled teens and Nancy's like meeting him, and he's got this line. It's so stupid. Welcome to the snake pit.
Oh yeah.
It's the worst. It's so bad.
There's a lot of super like corny like bad lines.
I mean, sure, that was probably like awesome in like 1987. Like, man, that guy probably hangs out with Skid Row.
Yeah, right. Yo, that guy's fucking badass, man. Snake pit. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, and like, now I'm kind of wondering, like, who's that movie really made to scare, like, dumb teenagers, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, man.
So, you know, seeing it as, like, a 9 or 10-year-old, you're, like, horrified by it, you know, terrified. I was always terrified of Freddy Krueger. Like, Jason and Michael Myers never really scared me, because I always thought, like, I could get away from them. Like,
yeah.
There was always the hope that I could maybe run away from them, but, like,
yeah.
We always thought the Nightmare on Elm Street movies had, like, as an advantage is, like, you gotta sleep sometime. Everybody knows what it's like to try to stay up and fail spectacularly.
Yeah, and here's a guy who's literally using, like, what you're afraid of. Like, and this was before, like, Pennywise the Clown. This guy's actually using, like, what you're, like, afraid of, or what you're, basically, what your MO is to fucking assassinate you.
Yeah.
I remember my brothers saw the first Nightmare on Elm Street, and... like, they had, like, nightmares. Like, I was way too young, and thank God, because, like, even the first one still has a lot of really, like, nightmarish, like, imagery, and was really done as, like, a serious movie for its time. But, yeah, I remember them having, like, I mean, we all shared the same room growing up, so, like, when they had nightmares of, like, Freddy Krueger, I'm, like, waking up, like, oh, my God, like, I'm scared. Here are my older brothers. They're waking up, like, terrified, and it's, like, who's this Freddy guy? Is he coming for me too? Because I'm sharing a room with them. Like, so, but yeah, I remember them watching it and me trying to sneak in to watch it with him. But like, anytime he came on screen, I just like ran out of the room.
Yeah, I was always terrified of Freddy. And then like, you know, when you watch it like as a 14-year-old, you're like, it's still kind of scary, but like now it's kind of funny too.
Yeah,
and then when
you
watch it as like a 25-year-old, you're like, this is hilarious. This is like, you know, because it's like, your legs, where do you keep the bourbon?
Oh, man. I said, where do you keep the fucking bourbon? Oh, that's a great, yeah. There's so much really cool stuff. And like, Chuck Russell was talking about that. He was like, that was another thing like the studio was like really giving him a hard time about. He really had to fight to bring some of like the comedy into the movie, because like the parts, so when Wes and that guy Bruce wrote like the original script, it was really fucking dark, you know what I mean? It was more on tone with the first one, so they were like, man, you know, so when Frank Darabont and Chuck Russell rewrote it, you know, they brought in like the big budget and the effects, because a lot, like when the New Line Cinema got a hold of it, they're like, yeah, this is a great script, but how the hell are we gonna do like any of this stuff? Like the shit you're talking about doing in here is like, We need so much money to do this. Like, you ain't gonna be able to do all this stuff you're talking about doing in here. And yeah, he really fought to get like the comedy, the dark comedy in there, because just to lighten it up. I was like, I wonder what the original movie would have looked like if they stuck to it, and how scary it would have been.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I definitely think like the comedy parts though is why this movie's so goddamn iconic.
And, yeah.
Like, it's kind of lasted as long as it has.
Yeah, I think that's why, like, you can't redo it. Like, you can't replicate it. Like, for one thing, you had the right guy to pull it off, Robert Englund. He could pull the comedy and he could go funny and dark at the same time and really pull it off in that makeup. if what was it 2010 when the remake came out?
Yeah,
and they stuck strictly to the darkness of it, and it was terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of those movies though. The character is so like intertwined with Robert Englund that no matter, you could have had anybody play it, and it would never have stood up. You could probably remake it, but you'd have to let like Freddy Krueger kind of fade out of people's collective minds for a while.
Yeah, it would be a long time. I think it would be a long time. And like I said, I think, like you said, piggybacking off what you were saying, I think him, the comedy and the one-liners is like what makes him just so iconic and enjoyable for everybody. I mean, he's as far as horror icons and franchises, the Nightmare on Elm Street movie still stands as like the most profitable. I don't think, even though it has probably the fewer movies out of all of them, like out of Jason and even Halloween at this point, this one has the fewer movies made, but has made the most like money. And it's not, I don't even think it's like close. I mean, you figure Nightmare on Elm Street 2, you know, if this came out in 1987, I'm guessing Nightmare on Elm Street 2 probably came out in like 85. You know what I mean? Or 84, 85. At that time, I think it made, the first weekend, it made like over $29,000, which, yeah, sounds like $29,000. That's like what a Marvel movie's making after it's been in this theater for weeks, like when it's getting ready to go to rental. But like in 1986 or 85, that was a lot of money. And that movie didn't cost nowhere near that to make.
Yeah.
So it was like a big, big time.
You figure that first movie, though, man, made probably so much money compared to what it cost to make. You know, they weren't paying actors or anything because they were all nobodies.
They were all nobodies. And another thing with 3, that 3 is why they went with, like, you never heard of these people. Like, even Patricia Arquette, this was her first real movie. She had never been in anything after that. She probably didn't get paid anything. It all went to, you know, special effects and stuff like that. And I forget, like, what it ultimately made, but it was, like I said, it was making what Marvel movies make today. For 1987, it was just, like, unheard of to make that amount of money in the theater. But that's the thing, too. Like, all these horror movies, they were all geared towards, like, they knew who their audience was, which is really smart.
Yeah.
And they knew who was going to, like, go see it and who's going to take their girlfriends to go see it. Same with you. I was always scared of Freddy. I was kind of scared of Michael Myers, but I was never scared of Jason. If anything, I thought Jason, like, looked cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, the people in the Friday the 13th movies weren't likable. They're, like, they're assholes, so yeah, they should have got killed.
They should, yeah. That's another thing. That's another thing, too. Like, I don't want to say like 5 and 6. I don't really have a kind of like invested interest in those, in the people getting killed in like the 5th and 6th movie. But like the first one and the third one, yeah, I actually, they did really good job actually like presenting these kids as like characters that you actually, like, we're laughing about the Prince of Elves, but at least they gave him like some sort of personality you could get like invested into, and you kind of, so you're like, laughing, but you feel bad.
So I'm wondering how much of that they like kind of modeled off like the Breakfast Club. Like, all right, we need the jock, we need the nerd.
Oh yeah, you know, I'm sure. I think that was like, kind of standard. Like, what's the stereotypical like groups of like teenagers at schools? Because yeah, they're the ones coming to see it.
Yeah, then you figure like 4, 5, 6, and the rest of them all kind of use that same formula.
Yeah, I think, you know what? I think the only thing different, I guess, like, the Nightmare on Elm Street movies don't really have, like, the slut character. Like, because the Friday the 13th movies always have, like, the promiscuous girl in the group, or the bitch kind of girl, you know, stereotype for that time. The women characters are actually, like, kind of enjoyable in these movies. Like, you kind of root for them.
Yeah, they kind of made them, you know, yeah, the... Nancy's, does she survive in 3?
Nah.
No, that's right. She gets stabbed. Yeah. Yeah. Right, yeah. But yeah, Trish Carquette, she lives. Kincaid lives.
Joey.
Joey. Yeah, then like they recast Patricia Arquette with somebody who looks nothing like her. In the fourth one, like, I mean, you could have found somebody that kind of looked like this girl looked like Dennis the Menace or something with like hair. Oh God.
I remember going to see four and actually being like really like, oh man, Patricia Arquette didn't come like because by then like she started blowing up after Nightmare on Elm Street 3. And apparently everybody, all the dudes on set, like, had a huge, like, crush on her. Like, they were all really sweet on Patricia Arquette, especially the guy who played Joey. Can't think of his name off the top of my head. But, you know, it's a shame. I'm hoping one day she actually, like, kind of opens up and kind of talks about this movie. Like, not the negative stuff. If she's got any, like, kind of positive stuff to say about the movie, it'd be cool to, like, hear her talk about it. And it's a shame, you know? It's a shame, like... I think it was a really good call to bring, like, one of the, like, you saw the impact of having actually, like, Heather Langenkamp come back and play that role. They could have did something. I think the fourth movie would have been so much better if Patricia Arquette was to come back and actually play the woman versus, like, yeah, the Dennis the Menace woman you're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, they even brought the mom back. Her mom was the same
lady
in the both movies.
Yeah.
Another funny thing too, you know, something I've seen this movie so many times and I never picked up on it until very recently. So Hypnosil, the drug that they're taking, not dreaming, like Freddy versus Jason. That is the stuff Heather's taking in the third movie.
Yeah, okay.
That's the stuff they prescribe. Oh. And I was like, man, dude, that's crazy.
I've only seen Freddy versus Jason once, maybe twice.
Oh man,
I'll probably do for another rewatch.
Well, that's another movie really take with a great assault. Like, I remember us like joking about that movie when it came out because we saw that movie in the theater, and I still love that movie, but like, yeah, it's kind of like, it's so funny, like, they're it's so funny hearing these teenagers literally like coming up with like the plan of like Freddy Krueger's plan, like amongst themselves. It's like, shut up, man.
Wait,
maybe Freddy really needs Jason to make everybody scared of him again. It's like, dude, you wouldn't have thought of that. Shut the fuck up.
Jason was killed by water, Freddy by fire.
How can we use that? That movie's still worth watching for like the fight scene at the end. The big monster mashup at the end. Yeah. So that'll be a movie for another episode.
Oh God, yeah. I feel like you could have a couple episodes dedicated just to this whole series of.
Oh yeah, like I said, well, I know a future guest. Because I was talking about you, like I was talking about you coming on, and I was like, oh man, well, of course he's talking. If Corey's coming on, we either got to talk about John Carpenter's vampires.
Real quick. So Valak the vampire from John Carpenter's vampires, he's the bad guy from Karate Kid 3.
Yeah, so...
Terry Silver.
Yeah, you fucking blew my mind when you pointed that out on Instagram. I was like, oh my God. Like, Donnie was on the show. And it's like, you'll see it when it finally airs. See, we tape these shows. We don't know when they're going to air. He was on the show, and I was, like, laughing. I'm like, man, watch. One of these days, I'm just going to, like, look at my comment section if anyone even bothers to watch the show. They'll be like, man, fuck this guy. He don't know shit about movies. He's got his own show. He don't know half this shit. I'm like, man, they're going to, like, rip me apart for all the stuff I don't know and all the movies I haven't seen. But yeah, you blew my mind with that. And I was like, oh, I felt so dumb. I was like, I have watched John Carpenter's Vampires, I don't know how many fucking times, and I never put that together.
Yeah.
It was so, like, staring me dead in the face.
Well, that guy's only been in that one movie, I think. I think he's, old, like...
That is true. And to my credit...
It was Karate Kid 3, I mean...
Yeah, how many times... I have not gone back and watched Karate Kid 3. For like any reason whatsoever, and there's no reason to, in my opinion.
No,
it's definitely not like, yeah, it's only Karate Kid 3. The only part in that movie I enjoy is like the when they show the flashback of like Mr. Miyagi, live or die. Hulk. Live or die, man.
I was like,
he's either going to want to talk about John Carpenter's Vampires, Hellraiser, or it's got to be like a Nightmare on Elm Street movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely want to come back on and talk about John Carpenter's Vampires.
I will say that. I will definitely say that for you.
I'm just trying to think, who would be the worst Freddy Krueger?
Oh, man.
I think Will Smith would be a terrible, terrible Freddy Krueger.
I think Will Smith and or Chris Rock.
I think Chris Rock would be better than Will Smith, though.
Well, I think anybody would be better than Will Smith. Dennis from Always Sunny should play him. Okay. So Chris Rock is not the worst. Always Sunny gave me the idea of who could be worse. I think if you got Danny DeVito to be Freddy Krueger, that would be like the worst guy, especially if he played him like he played like the Penguin in Batman Returns.
I would actually go see that movie opening night if Danny DeVito was Freddy Krueger.
I think that's a funny... I think if SNL was still funny... which it's not anymore, and he was hosting, that would be like a good bit. Danny DeVito is Freddy Krueger. I'm in your dreams! Down here! If the guys from Always Sunny are watching this, do like a, can you do like a parody episode where like Danny DeVito is somehow like Freddy Krueger?
Yeah, when they do the Lethal Weapon 7 or 8, Always Sunny, maybe they can have Danny DeVito just be Freddy Krueger in that one.
When they do like the, what's that ultimate game they play? And then he, like, they do the second episode, he's trying to play like a Saw movie.
You know, I have a feeling like they would make like Dwayne The Rock Johnson be Freddy Krueger. Because like that guy's in fucking everything.
That or Ryan Reynolds. Hey, we need someone who can be like comedic. Hey, Ryan!
Yeah, fucking Van Wilder. Let's get him. Yeah.
Hey, man, just, you know, instead of dressing up like Deadpool, can you dress up like Freddy and just do the same shit?
That
I do love those Deadpool movies.
That would probably work, though, if they were going to just, like, remake Freddy 6.
What,
like, doing a shot-for-shot remake of Freddy 6 with just fucking, what's his name as Freddy?
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds.
What, that's another thing too, like that's a, like getting like, okay, what they'll probably do is like, okay, well, you know, we can't redo Freddy, so we're gonna do a movie where it's like the origin story, like a prequel, because they're trying to do that with Jason now. I think there's like a show coming out where like it's Jason at camp, kind of doing like the, they kind of did that with like Norman Bates. They had that show Bates Hotel.
Okay.
Right, which I heard some people say was actually really good. I've never watched it, and it's got the actress. I always butcher her last name, so I'm not even gonna try. Vale Farmer.
I know what I'm talking about.
I always butcher her name. I'm not even gonna try and pronounce it right. But from
Vera
the Conjuring
Farmland,
movies,
yeah,
from the Conjuring movies, you might know her from. I love that movie. Now I can't even think of it. Leonardo DiCaprio, Jack Nicholson.
Departed,
yes. She's in Departed. But no, like, she's in it as Norman Bates' mom. I heard it was, like, really good. They're trying to do that with, like, these characters. Like, they're doing that with Jason. Like, I don't need to know
Jason, because you already know, like...
I already know.
What, you want to see, like, 5 episodes of this kid getting fucking bullied and shit?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I already know that story. Tell me a different story. There's nothing you can add to that. Like, maybe there is something you can add to that story, but... do I want to devote my time and money to it?
No.
And yeah, I don't want to I don't want a prequel to this movie where he's a normal guy. I want the dream demon guy. I want the fucking one-liners. I don't want to, like, they already tried a movie where you showed him as a pederast, and it was terrible.
Didn't work, like, because it was always like alluded to. Like,
yeah, it was
always
subjective.
Like, he was like a child killer, child torturer, not like, you know, a fucking total child rapist.
Yeah, and then you find out, like, oh god, yeah, he was. Like, yeah. You said, it was like all like alluded to or subjective. It kind of like, it made it creepier because it's like, okay, we're gonna kind of put this space out there, but we're gonna let your dark thoughts and your negative aspects fill it.
Yeah,
and they really did that with him. They didn't need to like show what they showed in the remake, which is like, yeah, he's a full on molester.
Yeah.
You know, make me fucking helicopter parent my kids, piece of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, it's pretty, I don't know. I think like this might be one of those things where like you can never redo it. You can never, like, you've captured it once. It was good for what it was. It's like, it's never going to work again. And which are, you know, Hollywood kind of seems to never believe that, but I think it's sometimes kind of true. Or you'd have to wait like another 15 to 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, he's so tied to, you know, horror genres and things like that because he's so goddamn iconic. He's never going to, like, fade away to where it's, like, you don't really think about him. You know what I mean?
I mean, there even, it was up till very recently, they were even asking him, like, he came back for, I guess, the Goldbergs was the last official time he put on the Freddy makeup. This was a couple years ago.
Yeah.
He did a Goldbergs episode, and that was only because, like, the guy who, I guess, like, wrote the Goldbergs or writes for the Goldbergs was like, hey, man, I'm such a, like, literally wrote him a letter, like, hey, man, I'm such a fan. It would mean so much to me. Would you be willing to do it? If not, because we really want to do an episode tie-in, and he did it. But, yeah, that was, like, they're still asking him to put the Freddy makeup on. I think he put out, so this is, I don't know when this is going to air, but this is June 10th, 2023. We're actually filming. And I just read an article this past week where he's like, okay, I'm officially done. I'm never putting the makeup on. So, like, they're still asking him to do it. He's literally got to come out with a public statement saying, no, I can't even if I wanted to. I can't. I'm at the point in my life where even if I wanted to be Freddy Krueger, I can't sit in a makeup chair for fucking 8 hours.
Yeah, it's got to be brutal.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, same thing with, like, Ron Perlman. Like, Ron Perlman wanted to do Hellboy, and he's like, hey, man, if we're really going to do this Hellboy 3 movie, which I really want to make, the clock's ticking because I'm getting older.
Yeah.
Even if I could do the stunts, I can't sit in a makeup chair. So, yeah, I think it's going to be, I don't know, I think, like, it's going to be really, really, they might be unfillable shoes at this point.
Yeah, I really kind of think it is. You know, that reboot was so fucking awful. Like, was, you want to see how much they would do, like, a 180 from that. So would they go for a, like, shot-by-shot remake of the first one? Or would they, like, totally change the character to be, like, some, like, chick Freddy or, you know?
You know what? That's actually something that, like, is pretty popular nowadays. I wonder if they would ever do that. It's a female. If they made a female Freddy, I don't know how that would go over. But that might be, like, their way to be like, you know what? We can't recreate that Robert Englund magic. So we're not even going to try. Here's this. Like, I mean, they did that with Hellraiser. And I didn't think that Hellraiser remake was bad. I thought it started off kind of slow. And I think it still had some things that paid homage, like the mood and the vibe, I think still really paid, like, a good homage to, like, the original. But you never know. That might be the way they go. We're just going to make a movie about Amanda Krueger.
Oh, that's right.
Being like an evil, like,
yeah.
Being a vengeful spirit or something. Hell, we might just gave, I just gave New Line Cinema their new idea.
It wasn't Freddy 6. Wasn't it supposed to be his daughter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the story. That he had, like, he was doing all this heinous stuff, but he still had, like, this daughter, and they kind of made you think he was going after his son, but it was really just But they never followed that back. They never went back, you know, 6. The only other movie they made after 6 that you could kind of still tie to the original franchise is Freddy vs. Jason, and even that's still kind of, like, its own thing.
Yeah. New Nightmare was good.
New Nightmare was good. New Nightmare, man, is a very underrated movie.
Yeah, I like the concept of it.
I do like the concept. Yeah, I like the concept. I think it's like another, I think that's another movie where the makeup doesn't age well, but it was still a really cool idea. Yeah. And I like the skin the cat, like, always one of my favorite kills too. That's like it. So if I, okay, so we'll end it with this, like, top 5 Nightmare on Elm Street Kills. Two of them are in this movie, in Nightmare on Elm Street 3. Number one all time is Welcome to Primetime, Bitch.
Yeah, it's
good. Head Through the Fucking TV.
Yeah.
Classic. Two is my man from the snake pit getting made into a puppet. Number three's got to be Johnny Depp getting eaten in the bed.
Yeah.
Number four's got to be Skin the Cat from the first movie. And I don't know. I think number five would be tough because there's still some really good ones out there. But I don't know. I think number five, I'm going to go with Joey. Number four, How's This for a Wet Dream?
Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of have to go. I think your list is pretty on par with mine. I think I might add, though, just the Freddy shark on the beach, just because it's so ridiculous.
That one's, yeah, and that's really funny. Like, so going back and watching that movie, that's really funny, too, because he just straight up, like, that's where he kills the fake Patricia Arquette in 4, right? That's yeah. That's such a, just a fucking hilarious, like, almost like a Mortal Kombat kill. He just, like, straight up throws her in, like, some hot water, and she even comes up, like, half burnt. It's like, it's like a Mortal Kombat fatality.
Is that the one where he steps on her in the sand?
He steps on her in the sand at the beach, and then she, like, goes through the house, and she's, like, wandering around the house and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah,
And she brings... And that's another thing, too. Like, so Freddy never got his... Freddy never got his comeuppance on the... I think her name's Lisa Wilcox, the actress, but the Alice from 4 and 5, he never got the... So that's one that got away, man.
Yeah, she was his... kryptonite, I guess. Or
I guess the, so. That's. I guess she's the only one. Yeah, she's the only.
She survived two Freddy encounters. Man.
I was getting ready to say. I think next to Jamie Lee Curtis, she's the only scream queen of a franchise that actually came back, fought the monster twice, and lived to tell the tale. And they never did a movie where they came back to get her like they did. You know, they kind of did that with Jamie Lee Curtis with like H2O and stuff, but. Yeah, she was a female lead who beat the bad guy back to back.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's 2-0 against Freddy Krueger. Imagine that. I wonder if that's something no one's ever... I wonder if she holds the record for women heroines who actually, beat the bad guy back to back movies and live.
Sure, there's probably one of the Chucky movies or something like that.
Maybe.
Oh, I saw the first one.
It's the only one.
Oh, you know what?
Watching.
No, I saw the other one with.
We saw Bride of Chucky in the theater. Remember?
Yeah, yeah.
Great soundtrack. Terrible movie.
Awful movie.
Yeah.
Awful.
Sorry, that's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. I only like the first Child's Play movie. And I actually I like where the remake was going. I don't think the remake is a bad movie. I actually think it's cool, but it's just not Child's Play. Like they could, you know what I mean? Like it like I said, I like where that movie went. And I guess the 2018 remake of Child's Play, I think that's when it came out. But the one where Mark Hamill does the voice of Chucky.
Okay.
It's not a bad
Never
movie.
Saw it, so.
I mean, it's a good movie, but it's called Child's Play and it's like, it's not Child's Play. Mm. It's a movie where like you could have made like an AI doll, not a good guy doll, just an AI doll, called that movie something else, and it would have just been good on its own. Kind of like what Megan did.
Oh, okay.
And that was actually a good movie, Megan, if you haven't seen it. But that's another tale for another day. That is all the time we have here on The Marvel of Horror. Make sure you follow us on YouTube at The Marvel of Horror Podcast. Like, subscribe, leave your comments. If they're negative, well, you feel the way you feel. And we're actually on Spotify, too. So, again, I want to thank my man, my best friend, Corey, coming on the show. And we will see you next time. Take it easy.